Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here again, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Barry Samus, and Barry lives most of the time in Israel. He's written a fascinating book on who really killed Rabin. Of course, it wasn't the man who was put in prison. A fascinating insight into what's going on over in Israel. He's only going to be with us for 30 minutes, so we're going to take no calls at all. We're just going to get his impressions of what's taking on in Israel today, as, of course, tremendous pressure is being put on the settlers in Gaza to pull out. Israel seems to be drawing back behind a very narrow a wall of protection. But, of course, when you have people who are intent upon driving you out Holy Land, why, I don't see very good prospects for peace there. Barry, pick up the story and tell us what's really going on over in Israel and your impression throughout the world.
Well, of course, if anyone was really concerned about peace, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right.
Okay. This it amazes me that anyone would actually think the Gaza surrender has something to do with peace. Even as Israeli lefties don't believe there's going to be any security from this maneuver. In fact, Sharon had to fire his army chief of staff and his head of internal security because they knew this was going to be a disaster for the nation. And a few weeks back, I was hearing from all kinds of people genuine junta, coup talk. You've got 12,000 soldiers now signing signs that they will disobey orders to remove Jews from their homes. 2,000 of them are officers. We assume some of them are in charge of heavy equipment. And Sharon went crazy. His army is not going to support him, and he's using foreign troops. He's using Arabs. He tried to convince the Druze to pitch in. In other words, any Jew takes the babies from a mother's arm and throws the mother into a truck and takes her to a camp is no better than the Nazis. In fact, we're getting a repetition of this. And what amazes me here, now every time I do these tours, it amazes me just how nothing is reported. I mean, I'm reading the Toronto Star today. Front page is this glorious interview with Shimon Peres, murderer of Rabin, talking about his career in peace, winning the Nobel Peace Prize, which he bribed the Nobel Committee with. He gave Churchill Larson $100,000 to get him the prize. And I'm looking at this newspaper, thinking they actually know nothing here. They know nothing.
There's tremendous opposition then in Israel itself to this idea of
the country's infuriated. You wouldn't get that from the media here. You have an extremely extremely angry, betrayed country.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Barry Shammas. And certainly there's tremendous unrest over there. You're really talking about a revolt, a mutiny on the part of the military. Isn't it amazing we're not reading about that in the New York Times, the Washington Post, or the so-called conservative Wall Street Journal? Or is it possible that the media monopoly are able to control effectively what the American people hear, what they see and what they read, and ultimately what they believe? Well, Barry, why don't you pick up the story? We see a country in turmoil. We see tremendous unrest over there. Even many of the liberals don't back what Cerrón is doing.
Let's put it this way. They don't believe that the Gaza pullout will increase the security of the nation. First of all, how could you? I mean, realistically, what you've got now, after the pullout in Lebanon, you've got Hezbollah with 18,000 missiles now aimed at northern Israel. 18,000 from Haifa all the way to Tiberias. With one, literally, one push of the button, all of northern Israel is rubble.
Well, now, my understanding, though, the real force behind Cerrón is the establishment here in the United States.
Well, it's the CFR, of course.
Right. The CFR wants Israel to pull out, and this is only going to weaken Israel's position even more.
No, Israel's position is gone. The CFR wants Israel gone. I mean, and I'm not just saying this as a guess. In my new lecture, I put together the interviews I've had over the years, and one of the interviews was with Ron Pundak, one of the two negotiators of Oslo. And I got to him through a mutual friend. At the time I had and this was in January of 94. This was right after Oslo was announced. And he was gloating. He was bragging. He thought I was sympathetic. And he let the cat out of the bag all over the place. At the time, I didn't understand the full significance, but of the many things he told me, one was simply that his boss is Yossi Beilin, by the way, that Shimon Peres was the architect of Oslo. He denied thoroughly. Peres knew nothing, he told me, and I got that from other people. Peres simply lied later on when Oslo went through and included himself in the so-called glory. But nonetheless, he says, the object of my boss, who was Yossi Beilin, is a nation without borders. My boss believes that borders cause wars. And I was a little stunned. I'd never heard a concept like that before. I said, you're saying the object of Oslo ultimately is no borders for Israel? And he said, yes. It's borders that is preventing peace. In the future, Israel will not have borders, and the whole Middle East will be one giant border. And I was listening to this, and I said to him, you mean the object of what you're doing is to get rid of Israel's borders? And he repeated that. And
hold that thought for just a moment as we bring our stations back online. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Barry Shammas, and he is a reporter, a researcher. He certainly is one of the people over in Israel who is doing everything he can to try to get the people to understand they're being betrayed by their leaders, whether they be of the liberal or the conservative party. It really doesn't matter. It's just like we have here in the United States. They have one party, and of course, the Israeli establishment is really being controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations bunch, or the people who control the Council on Foreign Relations here in America. And Barry was saying that he was told by one of the men who negotiated the Oslo Accord that the real purpose of the Oslo Accord and everything they were doing was to do away with borders in Israel so that we could have a borderless society, so there would not, we could more or less integrate Israel with the rest of the Arab world. In a similar matter, this is exactly what they're doing here in America, as they want to do away with our border with Mexico, our border with Canada. They really want, of course, eventually to unite all of the northern hemisphere into one country, but they can't let the Americans. People know that. They have to lie to them. And in a similar matter, the leaders of Israel were lying to the Israeli people, weren't they?
Well, from the beginning. you're talking about from the beginning of Zionism, if you want to get down to it. But it really started rolling after 92 with this the biggest lie of all, the Oslo peace process. Now, what they're doing right now in the Middle East, now I won't go through the full complications. Sharon is has been a CFR spy since 1974. And again, in this new speech of mine, I trace his real role, which was the destruction of the Israeli right. He was planted in the Israeli right to destroy a very good stream of Zionism, once called revisionist Zionism, which was intended to neutralize the labor Zionism. Oh, I have a new book which I must send to you. Please email me your address. I will send it to you.
All right.
It's called Labor Zionism. It's called Shabtai Tzvi, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust.
Well, we only have a few minutes.
Exactly. I can't do the whole thing. The point of the matter is that the Labor Zionism of Sharon has always been the enemy of the Jews. Always. And right now, what they're aiming for is a Middle East bloc, like the EU, and Israel, there won't be a Jewish state. It's that simple. It goes. But they're doing the whole Middle East now. Now, there's a strange irony going on here that the Iraqi insurgents and the Gush Katif settlers are really fighting the exact same enemy. The difference, of course, is the Gush Katif settlers don't murder people. But nonetheless, they are fighting the same enemy. And if they stand up and somehow win, and by the way, that's most unlikely, but nonetheless, they will actually be playing an immense role in stopping this dreadful New World Order from spreading.
And this is really all about the New World Order, isn't it?
It's nothing else.
Okay.
Nothing else. It's certainly not about bringing peace to the Middle East.
Well, of course, I don't see any way at all that this idea could possibly work because of the Islamic faith. They believe that once they've had land, it can never be taken away. And the true Islamist is never going to rest as long as the Jews are there. They're going to have to drive them out. There's just no way, from their religious point of view, to allow them to exist there.
Yeah, but that's been scratched, and the wound, the salt has been poured in the wound. Don't forget that before 1917... there was a very different Middle East, a Middle East without Islamic fundamentalism and suicide bombers and so forth. Once the British got their little claws into this place, things erupted. Now, if you look at the map of the Middle East pre-1917 and look at it today, it's all artificial today, everything. There was not a Saudi Arabia or a Kuwait or a Gulf States or a Jordan or a Lebanon, and there was certainly never a Palestine. Okay, there was never a Palestinian people. And there were the Jews who were in Israel were certainly not Zionists. They were mostly religious Jews who were there out of conviction. But the British Freemasons, and I'm saying that without going into detail right now, I could, set up this Middle East. And I believe their long-range plan always was to join us in the world government. But now they're doing it. Now, that bomb, if you remember 3 weeks ago in Lebanon, that killed Rafik Hariri, who in their right minds believes Syria did it? I sure didn't believe Syria did it. It's not the way they do things. If the Syrians want to kill someone, they would take a sniper and kill him, not blow up the entire hotel district of Beirut. This was a classic CIA operation, classic, using local cells and so forth. And look how quickly, the next day you've got the demonstrations, everyone is mobilized on the spot. But that's not even what worries me, it's the fact that Lebanon is about to enter a civil war between pro-Syrians and anti-Syrians all over again. And that Syria itself is going to be split and divided, which is what they want. What worries me more is that about 4 or 5 days afterwards, there was a bomb in Tel Aviv that killed five people at a nightclub, and our government blamed Syria within 10 seconds. No, that was ridiculous. How could they know?
Well, of course, this is exactly what our government did the day after that bomb went off in Lebanon. The day after,
they blamed Prime Minister. Syria within 10 minutes.
Right. We said the Syrians did it, and we withdrew our ambassador from Syria. How could we possibly know that?
Now, one thing that bothers me is that in order for the bomb in Tel Aviv to go off, we had to let it in. And I use the word we very, very loosely. I think the deal was, all right, we let the terrorist in, but we don't want another 16, 22 dead young people. So he arrived half hour before the club opened, and it was a minor terrorist bombing. But nonetheless, our government blamed Syria within 10 seconds. And that lets me believe that this was no random terror bombing, and that a campaign to get Syria out of the picture was launched in a mighty big hurry. That's what I think happened.
Well, do you anticipate that either the United States is going to attack Syria or the Israelis are going to attack them?
They don't have to. Right now, you've got so much turmoil, and it's building up. Why bother? Iraq is more than a handful for this New World Order army. They're having a... Look, let's face it. The country is divided. Okay, you don't have to talk about dividing Iraq. It is divided. You don't have to talk about dividing Israel. Very, very shortly, it will be divided. What they're doing to the Middle East is upsetting the apple cart to the point where ultimately there's going to be control by outsiders. I expect to see the foreign armies in Israel. Israel will be driven to near collapse. Look at the military situation. Now, when the four settlements in northern Samaria are disbanded, they overlook, they're on the highest hills in northern Samaria, they overlook the highway, the coastal highway opposite Netanya. That's gone. The coastal highway can now be hit with stones, let alone mortars. When Gush Katif goes, that's the southeastern coast. And with Lebanon, with 18,000 missiles pointed at northern Israel, we've got a triple pincer action here. We won't be able to get out of it.
Well, what about Hezbollah? My understanding is they've got something like 18,000 troops up there. You know, these are dedicated terrorists, dedicated, financed by Syria and Iran, dedicated to the destruction of Israel. What influence is Hezbollah going to have as the Syrians pull their troops out?
Number one, the Syrians are not going to be pulling so quickly. What they're going to do is leave behind agents provocateurs all over that country. Okay, they may not have the troops, but they've got the disruptive capability they've already proven it. Lebanon, right now, is heading towards the old divisions. As for Hezbollah, again, I say, it doesn't matter the troops. They got so many missiles pointed at northern Israel, their capability of destruction. They don't need troops. Okay, once again, Israel has been weakened, and we're not talking militarily just. Look at financially, just in the last few weeks, number one, Stanley Fisher of the CFR and the World Bank is going to be the head of the Bank of Israel. Now, who imports a head of a bank of their local bank from abroad?
You mean this is Israeli's central bank will be controlled by an American?
Stanley Fisher.
All right.
Of the CFR, Bilderberg, World Bank, and IMF. But look what's happened since. You've got the Bronfmans of the CFR buying up the third largest bank in Israel. You got Ron Lauder of the CFR buying up the right-wing and religious media of Israel, the religious TV station, the leading conservative magazine. The CFR is buying up the resources of Israel right now. And, of course, when Israel is going to be sold off, especially Gush Katif, it's going to go through the World Bank, whose head is now another Sabbatean so-called Jew. And believe me, don't take the Jewishness at face value. These people have other allegiances. Now it's Paul Wolfowitz. When Gush Katif goes, Stanley Fisher will make darn sure that all his resources are handed over to the World Bank to be sold at auction to the Arabs. We're being set up from every point of view possible.
Well, I certainly feel very, very sorry for the Israeli people because, you know...
They don't know.
They have no idea what's going on. And of course, once the media is in the hands of the enemy, why, there's no way to get the information out. It's just very, very similar to the situation we have here. At least we have some private radio stations, and we do have alternative radio, and we have the internet. But without that, the average American would have no idea what is really going on in Israel or the Middle East or certainly here in the United States.
As I said, right in front of my eyes is this Toronto Star with a front page glowing review and interview of Shimon Peres, and every Israeli, I don't care who he is, they all know he's a slimeball. Okay, there's no, even the left realize that he is a very, very dangerous monster. Now, they don't want to say it as loudly as the right, but the Toronto Star has got the Jews of the city thinking that this is a human being. He's not a human being. He does not blood. You're really dealing with a mass-murdering monster. And the difference in reality, it's just so profound that there's no talking points anywhere.
Well, now, what are the chances that he will be deposed and that Netanyahu will replace him? Because Netanyahu is supposed to be a conservative. I don't believe he is, but I think
Netanyahu is CFR. Sure. This is part of my speech. Netanyahu was drafted into the CFR in 1974. All his career is owed to George Shultz, George Bush, and Richard Perle. Netanyahu is just as dangerous. He's a little better an actor. He was in power 2 days before he was hugging Arafat, 10 days before he was withdrawing from Hebron, a year and a half before he was signing the Y agreement. Netanyahu is as bad or worse than anyone else.
Well, I think that perhaps even more dangerous, because many, many people really like him. He's a very affable individual. He speaks excellent English. We think, of course, he represents conservative principles, but as with so many...
It's a show!
I know. It's all symbolism over substance, rhetoric over reality.
Israelis actually believe if they create the downfall of Sharon and bring in Netanyahu, there's going to be a change. There's going to be the CFR all over again. There is absolutely no way in the political system we have of changing a thing.
So what do you think is going to happen? I mean, because I see very little hope for Israel without God's intervention.
I hear that more and more, but that's what they said in 1939, and I really think that's not the greatest attitude. God wants a little help here.
Well, I'm not suggesting we shouldn't be involved, but what are the Israeli people going to do? I mean, you've got two political parties controlled by the same people. You got people waiting in the wings like Netanyahu, whose answer will...
And they kill people. They kill anyone who disagrees. That's the really bad part. They kill the politicians. They kill the rabbis. Again, this is my speech. Oh, people, look at my website.
Now, well, why don't we get your website out there, Barry?
www.barrychamish.com, BARRYCHAMISH.com. Look at the victims.
Well, Barry, I'm amazed that you're still out there doing what you're doing, because as outspoken as you are, I think it's only God's providence that's keeping you from joining the others who've been eliminated.
I feel that's probably true.
And I think that so we're going to have to rely somewhat on the Lord, just as here in the United States, those of us who are on the front lines of this battle, we really have to look to Him for our protection, because there's nothing we can do against the forces that are aligned against freedom in your country and in ours.
I'd like to believe that we can. Of course, that's a very frustrating belief, and it leads to a great deal of dismay and disappointment. But I'd like to believe that we can influence enough people in let's say judicial positions and police positions to actually protect their people. I must say, in Israel, it's bought and sold, the judicial system, and the police at the highest levels are also bought and sold. But nonetheless, I'd still like to believe.
Well, I think it's interesting that they've had to replace the chief of the military and the people in key positions in the intelligence. So obviously there are many Jews who, are not going along with this. But of course, once they're removed from position, they've lost their influence.
Yeah. Sharon fired them. He fires anyone who starts smelling a rat. Look, ideally, the dream, I wrote an article just based on rumors, and I wrote that they're rumors. When I have information, I say I have information. Nonetheless, about the possibility of a coup, and that Sharon had panicked and started firing all his military and intelligence leaders, which of course that was fact, out of this, the rumors of a coup. I had more response to people. Everywhere I go on this tour, everywhere, they say, when is the coup already? You promised us a coup. I told them I didn't promise you a coup. If I thought there was a coup, I wouldn't have written this thing. Sharon smelled it out and put an end to it. Okay, that, I didn't write there would be a coup. I wrote that Sharon stopped it. But so many people are grasping at straws. And I've, honest to goodness, I swear to 50, 60 times on this tour, people have said, when is the coup already?
Well, you've been on tour for how long now, Barry?
I started in Italy. It's been New York, Highland, California, Denver, Los Angeles, and now Toronto. It's been about 2 weeks, a little less.
I know you are certainly in demand, and we're really pleased that you're able to spend a little time with us this evening. And then, of course, Barry's going to be our guest on Monday morning on the American Freedom Network, which will be 7 o'clock Pacific time, or, of course, 10 o'clock Eastern time.
That's do you have any Toronto listeners?
Well, we do have them on shortwave and on the Internet. We don't
okay,
have
then Sunday night, 788 Marley Street, 8 p.m., I'm speaking at the Canadian Zionist Center.
Well, give the address one more time.
788 Marley Street at Lawrence, 8 p.m. this Sunday at the Canadian Zionist Center. We'll, you know, I'm reaching right to the most, well, devoted believers in Israel. Is my speech on Sunday night.
All right. Well, of course, right now, then, you really see turmoil. You see a lot of resistance from the settlers in Gaza who are going to be forcibly taken out of there. But I understand that they've been offered a phenomenal amount of money if they'll simply give up their homes and leave. How many of them actually took the money?
So far, very few, and it's not phenomenal money.
Yeah.
That's number one. It doesn't buy a three-room apartment, and they have beautiful homes and farms that they spent 40 years building. Okay, let's bribe or no bribe, it's a bad deal for them.
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how this thing plays out. And, of course, if the military and these people within the military who say we're not going to follow orders, that's pretty much unprecedented in Israeli history, isn't it?
After this, I assure you, the best hope, and the best we can hope for, is that the country will be irreparably divided and half the country will no longer accept the Knesset as their moral or legal authority. I will be amongst them. That's the best. The worst, after the horses, the gas, and the clubs, the dogs, if there's still resistance, they will shoot to kill. Sharon will shoot to kill. He doesn't care.
Well, don't you think that down the line they're going to be bringing in the United Nations troops to maintain law and order?
Sure. After Israel is forced to the wall, in will come the peacemakers.
And I really think that's what this is really all about, to create an impossible situation. The only solution is United Nations occupation of Israel and United Nations occupation of Jerusalem, which is the key to everything going on in the world today.
I could go to the other side of the equation. Sharon is the CFR. Sharon Netanyahu, they're CFR.
Right.
But there is that Shimon Peres, Yossi Beilin side, which is Vatican. We've got like two sides here vying for the honor of destroying Jerusalem. You've got the CFR, which is the Sabbatean Illuminati Royal Institute side, and you've got the Vatican Jesuit side with their main spy being Shimon Peres. So there's a competition now. Who could get Israel first?
Well, you just keep up getting the information out there, Barry, and I will, of course, email you and send you my newsletter. Have I ever, pardon me, my address? Have I ever sent you a copy of my book, Brother?
I loved it. Somebody else did.
Okay. Well,
I got it less than a month ago. It was just fine. You, of course, stress the British a little more than I do, but you do it just fine.
All right, I just wanted to make sure you had that. Of course, I'm fascinated by your information on the Sabbateans, but I've got to let you go because you've got another radio program coming up there in Toronto in just a few minutes.
I sure do. It was a delight. I'll see you Monday morning, 10 o'clock my time.
God bless. Thanks so much for being with us.
You gotcha.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, of course, our guest is a Mary Samish, and we're going to be back here in just a few minutes to finish up the program. We sort of lost. We had a 4-minute break there. I got so fascinated talking to Barry that I neglected to bring that out. But let me point out what Barry is basically saying is that the Council on Foreign Relations, a British Royal Institute, control one faction in Israel. The other is controlled by a Vatican. And what are the Vatican there? Well, of course, this, of course, is just another part of the Brotherhood of Darkness. There are many aspects of these organizations that are out there working behind the scenes. They have a common goal. A new world order, a new world religion. And, of course, Jerusalem is really the key. And one day I anticipate to see blue-helmeted troops marching down the streets of Jerusalem in preparation for the new governor, the new leader of the world. And, of course, if you don't know who that is, you're going to have to keep on listening right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and, of course, we had to let Barry Samish go. He had another radio program to do up there in Toronto, and we were very, very fortunate to get him for a short period of time. So the next half hour, and we're going to have actually Bob Griswold with us for half an hour from Ready Reserve Resources, and then we're going to have a speaker. Her name is Marilyn Golden, talking about the Terry Schiavo tragedy that's being played out today, and trying to put this into its proper perspective. But right now we'll be talking to Bob Griswold in just a few minutes. You know, if you know what's really going on in the world, why several carrier groups, the United States military naval carrier groups, are moving into the Mediterranean, moving into the Near East. We're going to have 6 or 7 carrier groups in that area here very, very shortly. Tremendous concentration of air power. Something big is in the offing. If you read what's happening in Belarus, why you're having revolts. In Pakistan, you're having many of the warlords are joining together, coming out against the military, the Pakistani military. And, of course, there's a tremendous Islamic movement within Pakistan. In fact, Pakistan today is one heartbeat away from having the Islamic radicals take over control of Pakistan's nuclear capacity. And then, of course, if you go into many of the other countries, there's a place called Kyrgyzstan in the Crimean area, in the Caspian area, and they're having revolts. There's tremendous instability all throughout the Middle East, and it's growing. There have been tremendous demonstrations in Iran. You're not hearing about it. There have been demonstrations in Syria. There have been demonstrations in Lebanon. There's tremendous uprisings all over that part of the world. The United States policy is to destabilize the Middle East, and we're doing a great job of it. And, of course, I believe our military is going to be having to expand its role. I don't know where the troops are going to come from, because we can't even fulfill our requirements for our military, for the Army, and even the Marines are not fulfilling their recruiting requirements, and more of the people in the military are going to get out, because an awful lot of them wonder what we're doing over in the Middle East, what that has to do with defending America. Well, with us on the line from the eastern part of the country is Bob Griswold with many ready-made resources, and we're going to talk this next half hour about preparation. Bob, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Doctor. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just fine, and certainly we're really, in many respects, living in very, very uncertain times, and we'll be back with Bob in just a minute and get his thoughts. Well, our guest is Bob Griswold from MediRead Resources, and Bob puts out a catalog really of the things that you need if we were suddenly to have the breakdown of society in America, or an emergency, a chemical or biological attack, or a hurricane, or an eruption, or a massive earthquake. What would happen if suddenly you didn't have access to this all the things that we have, the food and the water and the electricity and the things we've become so dependent on. And, of course, Bob has basically provides these things for people ahead of time. Once the catastrophe comes, why, you're not going to get these things for love or money. But go ahead and give us your thoughts on what's going on, Bob.
Well, I think all you have to do is go to the gas pump and figure it out. And you know, this is not going to change. It's just going to get worse as India and China's economy heats up, and more jobs flow into the Pacific Basin and the Asian Basin there, and their fuel consumption is dramatically going up, and we're talking about exponentially increasing the need for fuel. So what's happening is that there's going to be shortages, and that, you know, think about what fuel does. It harvests our crops, it brings our crops to the store, it processes our food, the electricity, all of that, all along the line. So it's just not the gas that's going to go up. If all you have to do is go to the supermarket today and you see what's happened to cereal, milk, cheese, all those products that, you know, come off the farm. And it's just going to continue to get worse as we have more demand all worldwide for oil. That's just one of the problems. You know, I was just watching the news today and they're talking about how we're not ready for a biological attack. What's going on in the Middle East? It really is. I've seen some pictures recently of the city of Fallujah, what was done there, and it was absolutely devastated. I mean, there's nothing left of that city. And the people who are going to go back there are going to be very aggravated at America for what we've done there, and without really without fulfilling the cause which we said we went there for, and that was to find the weapons of mass destruction. The whole anti-American sentiment there, we see the news, it's tried to portray a happy face on it, but there's a lot of anti-American sentiment there. You know, again, you know, we just see these disasters happening over the weather. And again, I have to point out that I don't think, you know, with what's going on in Florida right now with this young life, and I know there might be different people who think different ways, but it is a life. All she needs is food, and we're going to starve this lady to death. I don't know how, you know, we expect that God will just turn a blind eye to it. There are a lot of people in this country that are dependent on others that have diminished capacities, and we start starving them to death because they can no longer stand up for themselves. There's a lot of things going on, Doctor.
I think that we have to look at things objectively. And I think we have to realize that there are reactions to every reaction. To every reaction, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And I do not believe that God is going to continue to bless this country as we send our troops throughout the world to create an American empire. Now, most Americans don't understand that that's the real agenda. That's why we have troops in 130 nations throughout the world. That's why we have FBI offices in nations all throughout the world. What are we doing with FBI agents all throughout the world? That's why the United States Census Bureau. The United States Census Bureau is monitoring the AIDS epidemic all throughout the world. That's why we are building a $560 million embassy in Iraq. Does that sound like we're really planning on coming home? And the truth of the matter is, of course not, but we can't tell the American people what this is all about. And there is an agenda. It's a massive agenda. It's a long-term agenda. We are going to dominate the world and force all nations to go into this new world order. And any nation that doesn't want to go into that, why, we're simply going to foist a new ruler on them. We're going to insist that the people we want elected will be elected. And you saw that recently in the Ukraine. We were, in fact, what was so interesting, because the exit polls, the elections didn't agree with the way the vote came out. We demanded a new election. Let me tell you, the exit polls in Ohio and Florida and Texas didn't reflect the voting either, but we didn't ask for a new election in those states here. And believe me, the exit polls are a very accurate means of figuring out how the people voted. That didn't really matter. And all the swing states, I think six or eight of the six swing states during the last election, the last presidential election. Why, the exit polls were entirely different than the way the electronic voting machines counted the votes. And I think one of these days the American people are going to wake up and realize that we've been had. Be that as it may, I don't believe that God is going to continue to allow us to continue doing what we're doing forcing the will of a very wicked group of people who has controlled both of our political parties and the rest of the world. I don't think they're going to honor a nation that kills disabled people or kills its unborn children or is fostering a population reduction program all throughout the world. And that's one of the major things your tax money is going for, is worldwide population control, not only through putting contraceptives into vaccines, but giving dangerous vaccines to children throughout the world and allowing a major epidemic, and I'm speaking of the AIDS epidemic, to decimate the world and allowing malaria to spread because, oh, we can't have a DDT used to kill off the mosquitoes, and 100 million people have died since we outlawed DDT back in 1973, about 3 million a year. And when you pick up your newspaper and they tell you it's 1 million a year, they're simply lying to you. But then so much of everything going on is a lie. Well, I think what Bob's message is, people have to begin to make preparations, because I believe that one way or another, we're facing very, very bad times in America. Bob, would you like to get your telephone number and your website out there so people would know how to get in touch with you and find out the material that you have?
Yes, I would. You know, I just want to tell people the price of food, watch it, is going to grow exponentially. The ability to procure a food supply, it's like buying gold right now at a cheap price. It's going to skyrocket, and because of the harvesting cost, the production cost, the transportation cost, the price of food is going to become a major concern to most American families, where people will have to make some serious decisions on what they eat and how they eat and how much they're eating, because we will no longer be able to afford the plenty that we have. Be that as it may, what I want to say is that we do have food supplies for people for a month, you know, 3 months, a year, and we even have ones for families of four for a year. We have a wide variety of food. It's dehydrated. It comes in number 10 cans. Their oxygen, you know, all the oxygen's depleted so that the cans will last. The food will last 15 years in the can. And they can call us at our toll-free number, 800-627-3809. That's 800-627-3809, or they can visit our website, and that has all of the products on it, hundreds of different products that we sell, and that's ready-made resources. That's all one word, readymaderesources.com, and they can email us from there, or they can purchase online. But each person listening to this should really prayerfully consider what we're saying, because I don't want it to make it sound like we're just trying to sell stuff, and that was done a lot, that people have done that a lot throughout, you know, these kind of programs. But I think if you objectively look at the news today, objectively look at the world, the situation we're in, and where we're going, it takes more faith to believe that the world is not headed for a catastrophe of unbelievable proportion than it is to believe that we're going to somehow go through this without a major, major catastrophe that it will affect billions of people. And those, even in the United States, we see our currency's been devalued to the point now where if you go overseas and to England, it takes two of our dollars to buy £1, and what, $1.40 to buy a euro, where the euro started out at 89 cents, now it's $1.40. The price of gas is just, again, skyrocketing, and that is going to get much worse. The fact is not only now are we exporting our manufacturing jobs overseas, we're starting to export our research and development. All the things that make America so great, our gee whiz technology, is being now, it's being exported overseas to be done, and really what will be left economically is a hollow shell filled with debt.
Well, I think people have to understand that almost 50% of our major factories have now been moved overseas. Certainly our major automotive, General Motors, lost, I think, $1 billion this last quarter. Ford has been losing money for 3 or 4 years. As of the year 2007, China is going to flood the United States with cheap cars, and nothing produced here will be able to compete with them. So you're going to see, really, the breakdown of our automotive production here. It's only a matter of time before Michigan and Ohio and the other states where we are producing cars are simply going to be areas of ever-rising unemployment. The American people don't understand that everything going on is part of a master plan to redistribute the wealth between nations. If you don't believe that is the master plan, you need to read the Earth Charter. It's available on the Internet. That's the Earth Charter, point number 10. says, redistribute the wealth within nations, that's of course socialism, and redistribute the wealth between nations. That is, of course, what's going on today. That's why we are subsidizing our factories to move overseas. That's why, within this last 2 weeks, the Bush administration authorized a guaranteed a loan of $5 billion to the Export-Import Bank so that they can lend that money to Communist China. Of course, we never refer to it as Communist China, but it really is Communist China. Guaranteed a $5 billion loan to build nuclear plants in Communist China, beginning of a $50 billion plan to have nuclear plants all over Communist China. Now, we can't build nuclear plants here in America, but we can build them. We guarantee the money to build them for China. What sort of insanity is that? Oh, it's not insanity at all. We are building up the best enemy American tax dollars can buy. We're shipping our money overseas, and soon, of course, America will be impoverished as a nation, and those dollars spent in China, many of them will come back here to buy up our factories, be going into Canada to buy up the oil shale and the oil sands and the natural resources of Canada and other countries throughout the world. But who will be buying them will not be American companies. They, of course, will be the Chinese. So you know, you have to understand what's going on. We live in terribly uncertain times, and the average American really doesn't understand that there is a massive plan out there. And it is basically to destroy the financial and the moral and the military infrastructure of this country and the social infrastructure. And they're doing a great job of it because all our military is overseas. We do not have National Guard units here. They're all overseas. We don't have reserve units here. They're all overseas. And
you know, Doctor,
yeah, go ahead.
On top of that, you have the Internet. And I don't think people realize what the Internet is going to bring about. The fact that you go online today, and it really is, I'm not only competing with the people that are in my community or my country, I'm competing with people worldwide, and I'm competing with things that could be illegal in this country. Just anybody who gets email knows that you can buy just any kind of drug. Everybody gets those spam mails. You buy drugs without prescriptions. And so what this is bringing about is, again, a world government, because that's the only thing that can manage all these different countries, different laws that each have their own rules of what can go on the Internet and what can't. And so we're going to see world government that will control every aspect of what goes on the Internet, what can be sold, and that could be the excuse to bring about this world government. And with that comes control. Now, you know, again, some people think that might be a little far-fetched, but just think in the last 40 years how things have changed, and imagine in the next 10 to 15 years how things will change. I don't even know if it will be that long. I don't know if we have that long. I don't think our economy has that long. And when gas hits $4 a gallon and it's already over $3 a gallon in California, you know, our economy will start to shut down. Food will skyrocket in price. You'll have hyperinflation. It will be a very bad thing. And I think most Americans, as you said, don't believe it's going to happen here. Well, if God is just, it will happen here. And I believe it's only a matter of time we see it. We see the handwriting on the wall right now. There's still a window of opportunity for people to do something about it. And even if they don't do it with my company, think about what you need every day. Think about the food, the water that you have to consume every single day, even the electricity that you consume every single day.
Well, Bob, why don't you get to tell people about the catalog you have? Because I think I finally got my copy of the catalog, and it's really very well done. And it lays out the things that you would want to think about in case there were a cataclysmic event here in this country.
Well, our catalog, like I said, it's 150 pages, and it covers such things as food storage, water filtration, what happens if there's chemical, biological, nuclear warfare. We have a large book section, homesteading equipment, a lot of alternate energy equipment, and just generally just things along those lines that you would need. Fuel extenders so you can store fuel, how to store fuel, a lot of useful tips, outdoor equipment, if you were displaced from your home. And we don't like to think of those things, but they have happened. They have happened in this country. Just this last hurricane season, people in Florida had 5 hurricanes go through there. We see these things increasing. So that's what's in the catalog. anything, again, from, you know, small battery chargers all the way up to full solar energy systems that will run your entire home. We at Ready Made Resources, our office runs about 40 to 45% on solar and wind energy. We manufacture it, and we couldn't run entirely on just that right, the way we do it now. But if a crisis ever comes, we can gear it back, and we have enough electricity to run what we need to run in an emergency. We might not be able to run our air conditioners, but we could keep the important things running. And so that's what people can face. The technology and the ability is out there to store these things, to store food, to be able to purify water, to be able to harness electricity from the sun and the wind and all the elements around us, to live semi-normal lives when these disasters will happen.
Okay, well, how can people get the... the catalog, if they would like to get a catalog from you.
Well, the catalog, we do charge $5 for it, which we refund if you ever make a purchase, whether it's a week or a month or a year. If you make a purchase, we give you the $5 back. And after you get the first catalog, then we continue to send them out to you. But they can call us at 800-627-3809. Again, if you're writing that down, it's 800-627-3809. You know, we have a food package that we offer on this thing, you know, two people for a month, and it's $289. That would put food on your table, three meals a day, for $289. Now think of that. When a disaster happens, doctor, if you have a day or 3 days worth of food, most Americans have about 3 days worth of food in their house, you run into that panic zone really quick, because all of a sudden you're out of food. Maybe the water's had to be turned off. It's contaminated. You can't run the water. That happened in Florida during the hurricanes. Whereas if you have food for a month, 3 months, a year, however long you want to do it, you know, you push that panic zone further and further away from you, to where, you know, you have the resources. That way you can start thinking about how I can improvise and do things should these things go south.
Okay, well, we've got Tim calling from Indianapolis. Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, gentlemen. I wanted to make a quick comment and a couple questions.
Okay.
Bob, since 2000, you know, we've been hearing about this Y2K, and I'm just really sick of this paranoia.
I see. So, in other words, you don't think people should make any preparations.
Well, it's been like 5 years, Dr. Stan. Let's do away with this paranoia if there's any men. And my two questions, one for you, Dr. Stan. The Bushes have been taking a lot of heat, both of them. Do you look for a diversion this weekend, as I do, from the situation in Florida? And Bob, as opposed to dehydrated beef and water, what about a gun, buddy? You haven't mentioned a gun. Shouldn't citizens have a gun also?
Yeah, you sure should. Thanks very much, Tim.
Well, again, I don't think it's paranoia. I mean, you know, the people in Nazi Germany who ignored the signs, it might have taken time for it to happen, but it took, you know, time for that philosophy of Nietzsche that produced Hitler to come into effect. It just didn't happen overnight. You cannot spend the money we're spending in our economy. You cannot bankrupt a nation. You cannot morally bankrupt a nation. You cannot export all of our jobs, all of our technology overseas without having severe problems. You cannot do it. So if you think it's paranoia, it's not. Y2K is not the issue. It's the fact of you follow history of nations that have done what we've done as a nation and see what the result is.
Well, I think you're only paranoid when you imagine people are against you. I think that there are very real reasons to be concerned. I think we could have an economic problem. I think that there really will be either a biological or chemical or a nuclear attack on the United States. In fact, if you read the Bible, you read about, you know, this terrible cataclysmic event is going to happen to the distant islands. It's talking about, nobody knows where those distant islands are, but there, of course, the fire will come to the sky and suddenly everything will melt. The people's faces and bodies will melt. The only description I can think of in that, and I think it's in the, let's see, Ezekiel 39,
Ezekiel 6,
something like that, and it talks about this terrible cataclysmic event. I think that it would be foolish not to make preparations for it, and I just hope and pray that it never happens. But I would think you would have to be very, very foolish not to make preparations. People who made preparations for Y2K, I think that many of them were very wise, and they should just sit tight and hope that they never use it. It's sort of like buying a health insurance. You hope you never have to use it. but it's sure good to have if something does come down the line.
And the other thing he mentioned is a firearm. I firmly believe, you know, that firearms prevent crime. You know, when you have an armed society of honest men and women that are armed, put it this way, you know, a woman today in today's society, especially when we see what's happening to these little kids, you know, but a woman who's armed, it equalizes the difference in strength between a man and a woman. And that's why I think every woman should be armed in this nation.
Well, unfortunately, here in California, why they have all sorts of laws that you really can't carry a firearm, but I think that we should do everything we can to actually change those laws so that people can protect themselves. And unfortunately, we're moving away from a law-abiding society into, I believe, a period of increasing chaos and crisis. But that's what you might expect.
The criminal will always have a firearm.
Amen to that. Well, Bob, we're out of time. One more time, your telephone number.
They can call 800-627-3809 or the website readymaderesources.com.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I want you to know that Bob does help and does support Radio Liberty. And, of course, this is the time when we want to mention to our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you are listening to us and you agree that you're going to hear things on Radio Liberty that, you know, are important that you're not going to hear elsewhere, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. There are three things we like to stress, and we will have the people on over and over again. First of all, we'll have Bob Griswold on talking about just making general preparations, food, emergency supplies, things of that sort. Secondly, we think that you should be prepared financially for some very difficult times that lie ahead. Third, we think you should be prepared health-wise, and we have Bill Sardi on again and again talking about how to build up your immune system, because I'm really very, very concerned, especially after reading an article just this morning, of how the Centers for Disease Control, that organization we're dependent upon to maintain our health, has gone over to Asia, has gotten this virus that is in the fowl there that's killed countless millions of geese and ducks and chickens, and they brought it over here, and they're growing it in human influenza viruses and taking gene sequences out of this deadly virus and getting it to grow in things that now will grow in human beings. And this article, we're saying this is dangerous. Some people say it's dangerous. Why, there are three instances where the SARS deadly virus, three instances where it escaped from laboratories. Why are we doing what we're doing? Well, I can only suggest that there may very well be another agenda, very similar to the agenda we had with the AIDS epidemic. We did everything, the CDC did everything possible to block the implementation of effective public health measures that could have stopped this epidemic before 500,000 Americans died of AIDS. If you haven't read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, you really need to get that. You need to read it to understand how we allowed this epidemic to spread in America. It's killed 500,000 Americans and over 20 million people throughout the world. Another 40 million are infected, totally unnecessarily. And these are the people now who've gone to Asia to get the H5N1 virus, and they're growing it in human influenza virus. In other words, the kind that it can infect humans. It's not, in the past, it hasn't spread from human to human, but it may very well before long. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we talk about, and one of the things we stress is, learn how to build up your immunity. And that's why we've had these programs with Bill Sardi. If you don't have copies of that, why, please give us a call and get the interviews I've done with Bill Sardi this last month on how to build up your immunity. The book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. You need to get a copy of it. You need to get our 4-tape set on population control. You need to get our video on population control. You need to get our monograph on the population control agenda. And then you need my latest video, None Dare Call It Genocide. It's a talk we gave here at the recent meeting at the seminar we had last fall. None Dare Call It Genocide, but it will give you an overview of what things that are going on, information that you need to survive in difficult times like this. And you're only paranoid, remember, when you imagine people are against you. The Vridyar people would like to kill off a majority of the world's population. If you've never seen that article that quotes Jacques Cousteau, says we've got to eliminate 350,000 people a day, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send it to you. And, of course, if you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, perhaps on the water fluoridation and how it's being used to poison our children, that's our November newsletter. We'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection, well, to our listeners up in the Great Northwest. Remember, you can hear our next hour on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. Good evening, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, for at least until the first break, because we have with us on the line Marilyn Golden. We're going to be talking about the Terri Schiavo situation. We're going to be talking about the importance of human life. And, of course, this attitude, well, because she's disabled, why she's going to have to be eliminated. Now, one of the significant things is the term persistent vegetative state. If you are in a persistent vegetative state, you're in a coma, you are vegetative, you cannot respond, you are not aware of your surroundings. But Terri Schiavo is not in a persistent vegetative state. You could call a cat a dog, but it's still a cat. You can call a rhinoceros a hippopotamus, but it's still a rhinoceros. And you cannot say that just because you call Terri Schiavo in a persistent vegetative state that she's really in one. You see, there is truth out there. There are absolutes. There is right and wrong. Human life is important, even if it's disabled. And, of course, once we devalue human life and we allow the courts in this country to say it's all right to kill disabled people because they have a life that's not worth living, and the husband, who's an adulterer, who's living with a woman who's had two children by her, thinks it's perfectly all right to kill his wife, that's wrong. Well, I don't care what you say. This is all about getting rid of her, and he wants her dead, and the family, of course, doesn't want her dead, and they'd be glad to take her home and take care of her. But, you see, they're not allowed to. they want her dead. Well, Marilyn, thank you so very much for being with us this evening. Can you tell us a little bit about you, yourself, and the organization you represent?
Yes, thank you. I'm Marilyn Golden. I'm policy analyst with the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund. We're a national law and policy center on disability civil rights with an office offices in California and Washington, D.C.
Now, Marilyn, are you on a regular telephone, hardline telephone?
Telephone.
Beg your pardon?
I'm on a cell phone.
Oh, do you have any access to a regular telephone?
I do.
Would you mind getting on that? Because it's got a very, very hollow sound to it. It would be much better. If we put you in touch with our producer, could you give her the telephone number? We could call you.
All right.
I'm going to go ahead and have our producer go ahead and just talk to you and get the other number. And, of course, we'll get her back here in just a moment. And I think it's so important that people understand that there is an attitude that there are certain lives that are not worth living. And they keep using this term, persistent vegetative state. But this, of course, they have to use that term because there are certain laws that allow you to kill people in a persistent vegetative state. But Terry Schiavo is not in that state. So they keep repeating this over and over again, but unfortunately, they're lying to you. When you hear people using that term in reference to Terry Schiavo, understand they are trying to justify genocide. And once we say it's all right to kill Terry Schiavo, we've established a legal precedent that will allow them to eliminate anybody they want to. And this is how it started in Hitler's Germany. They started out talking about, there were certain lives that were not worth living. And these were the people who were not productive. They were people who were mentally defective. They were people who were insane. And they simply killed them. But it was a short step from that to killing the communists, and then killing the Jews, and then killing the gypsies. What they never tell you in America. Well, and I'll tell you that when we get back here in just a moment. What they never tell you in America is the fact that there were 12 million others who died in the concentration camps in Germany. Now, you'll find that reference in a book called Warrant for Genocide by Professor Norman Cohn, who is a Jewish scholar, his book Warrant for Genocide is an excellent book on the Holocaust and what happened to the Jewish people there. But in the foreword of the book, he talks about the 12 million others that died in the concentration camps. Isn't it amazing that in America today, with freedom of speech and freedom of the press, we never talk about the 12 million others who died in the concentration camps? We never talk about this whole idea that they began to do away with useless eaters. They began to do away with disabled people because, after all, they had lives that were not worth living. Marilyn, why don't you pick up the story and tell us a little bit about yourself and your organization?
Well, perhaps the sound is better. I hope I didn't...
That's ever so much better. Thank you so much.
As I said, I'm Marilyn Golden. I'm policy analyst with the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund, a National Law and Policy Center on Disability Civil Rights with offices in California and Washington, D.C.
All right, fine. And, of course, you're living here somewhere in California. And now, what is your attitude towards this whole Terry Schiavo incident? How do you feel about the justification that's being used to kill her? Because this is a case of simply murdering her or killing her.
We are looking at this from a disability rights perspective. This is a woman who is incapacitated, who can't express her own wishes. She has a guardian, a third-party decision-maker, who does not appear to be making decisions in her best interest. And we think she's being denied her constitutional right to lose her life without due process of law. We come from the principle that people with disabilities should be able to speak for themselves when at all possible, and that it is commonly viewed that life as a person with a disability is not worth living, and this is not the case. So we're looking at her rights and the denial of her rights.
Well, because one of the things they say, well, Terry would just say, I want to live, but she can't talk. So how can they possibly put that on her? Somehow they justify killing her because she won't say, I want to live. And yet, of course, she can speak very, very few words or almost no words at all. Is that a legitimate justification, or is that a justification for genocide?
Well, let me say it again in a different way. I know you maybe have a particular perspective on the issue, a very valid perspective that I
would hold that for just for a moment. When we see it, other stations right on here. Hold it just a moment here. Here. All right, our guest is Marilyn Golden, and she's talking about her perspective as a representative of groups that are presenting people with disabilities and the rights of disabled people. Go ahead, Marilyn.
Yes, as I said, we see this as a disability rights issue. Terry Schiavo is an incapacitated person who can't speak for herself. She has a third-party decision-maker who is not necessarily making decisions in her best interest. And she has not received her constitutional rights not to be deprived of life without due process of law. Terry is an example of anyone in guardianship, people with developmental disabilities, with psychiatric disabilities, with dementia, who often have third-party decision-makers or guardians who do not act in their interest. To deny food and water without clear and convincing evidence that she would have wanted that is a denial of her constitutional rights as a person with a disability. There's a number of interesting perspectives on this. Let me give you some of the ones we have. We're concerned that convicted criminals in this country have more rights than this woman with a disability in terms of her habeas corpus court appeal rights. And that was the purpose of the federal bill, to give her that right of review. We think there's another real irony, too, which is that people in Terry's position not only need their rights, but need also services that have been devised by this country to assist people with disabilities, one of them being Medicaid. We're delighted that, for example, the administration and some of the leaders of Congress have rallied around supporting Terry, but we urge them not to oppose the programs that are supporting her to live, such as the Medicaid program, which has been proposed by the president to be significantly cut. So there's a bit of an irony politically, and we appeal to all people who support Terry to support the Medicaid program and to support protection and advocacy programs that assist people with developmental disabilities like Terry.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I really believe that there's been a lot of political posturing, saying, oh, we're so concerned, but in the reality, they really aren't concerned. They're simply looking for votes and looking for the approval of the populace, because they know the populace, the vast majority of them are against what's going on, because they recognize it's murder. But there seem to be a very, very small group of people who control the media, who are have the other agenda, but the politicians made this big issue and accomplished absolutely nothing. I believe the President of the United States, if he really wanted to do something, would have sent federal marshals down there. He could have done that. He has the ability to do it. I think that Jeb Bush could have done it. But they're all hiding behind the courts. Oh, well, if the courts say it, why we're a nation of laws? Well, that isn't the true at all. We saw that, of course, with sending Elian Gonzalez back to Cuba. The president went in. They went in with a SWAT team. They snatched him away. The courts had not reached a decision at all. And, of course, they sent him back. That was the president's decision. Like it or not, he had the right to do it. If he didn't, he should have been arrested or impeached, and he wasn't. And certainly President Bush had the ability, the right to do that, and he didn't have the courage to do it. I don't think he wanted to. I think he was pandering, and I think he made this big to-do about, oh, I'm going to fly back, I'm going to sign this this legislation. But it was all symbolism over substance. And I'd like the opinion of the people out there in the audience, too, and I'd like your opinion. Terry, don't you think they're using this as a political football to gain certainly political points rather than to try to save Terry?
Well, I'll say this much, just that we'd like to see that same support behind the programs that are necessary to the livelihood of people like Terry. But in fact, the very same president is trying to cut those programs significantly. So there is some discrepancy there between those priorities.
So you say one thing and you do another. This is what you're suggesting.
There's some other interesting things about this case. They have said she's in a persistent vegetative state, which is a term we reject, by the way. But that is the term that is being used.
Can you define that term at all?
Well, the Florida law defines it as no evidence of neurological responsiveness, none. We've seen a number of studies that report a 40% misdiagnosis rate for persistent vegetative state. One neurology professor, Michael Weiner from UCLA, stated their opinion that she displayed at least minimal consciousness, and the judge acknowledged that the experts were divided on her neurological responsiveness, but he ruled that she's in a persistent vegetative state because her responsive actions were not consistent or reproducible. But Florida law does not define it as consistent or reproducible. They define persistent vegetative state as no responsiveness at all.
So
and
basically,
she has had some responsiveness, so the courts are using this term even when its legal definition is not being met.
And I think this is really what. So what's so really tragic about this situation? We have a couple of judges who've decided that Terry is going to die. And they are misusing the law, they're misusing the definition, and these terms are so, sort of vague. It's sort of like the term in a living will, extraordinary care. Now, what does extraordinary care mean? Does that mean being on a ventilator and having to be tube fed? Does that mean getting food and water?
The ironic thing here is that none of this is extraordinary. It's simply food and water.
Here.
We're concerned that there's many people in nursing homes, in other kinds of institutional settings, who, if they are inconvenient, if they are perceived to be financially burdensome, if they're not perceived as worth it, food and water is being withdrawn from people with cognitive disabilities, and they do not have the power to stop it.
And I think that is such a valid point of view. This is not extraordinary care. This is the basic care that you would give to any human being. And Carrie is a human being. If you were to starve a cat to death, you would go to prison. If you were to starve a dog to death, you would go to prison. If you were to starve a horse to death, you would go to prison. But if you would starve Terry Schiavo to death, why, of course, you'd be promoted within the judicial system for your courage in being willing to take a strong stand in a difficult case. And there's something seriously wrong with what's unfolding today. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a thought on this issue, we'd love to hear from you out across America. Well, Marilyn, I certainly agree with you. I think that they're misusing the terminology, and because they have an agenda. I think that, who appointed the person who was supposed to be impartial judge on this, their custodian? Obviously, this custodian was not interested in Carrie's well-being, but in society's well-being or her husband's well-being or maybe for one reason or another, they want to use this as an issue to perhaps justify this whole idea of euthanasia for those lives that are not worth living, at least in the view of society. Is that sort of the impression you have?
Yes, and the guardian, there was the court in Florida appointed what's called a guardian ad litem who analyzed a lot of things about the case. And one thing he observed is that the husband has a significant conflict of interest and probably should not be her guardian. We were very disappointed that the judge dismissed this recommendation. We're also concerned that the general public appears to think that this is an issue about whether or not she's going to, quote, get better. And that's not what these cases should be about.
And I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the chances that she's ever going to have a normal life, I think are pretty minimal. Sometimes people will wake up after 20 years in a coma. This has happened, but Cherry is already awake. She sleeps. She wakes up. She can respond, certainly not in a normal manner, but she is certainly as aware of her surroundings. Well, let's go to Sam, who's calling from Mississippi, and get Sam's view on this. Sam, would you like to have a question or a comment?
Yeah, this is Sam from Missouri.
Missouri, okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment, I'll tell you, this case has been grieving me all week. I'm a totally blind person, so I have a disability myself. And I could see where this could very rapidly deteriorate into, you know, who knows what all. You know, like you said, Dr. Stan, once you open that door, where does it end? I mean, it's like everything else that we seem to have done in turning our back on God in this country. And on the sanctity of life. But here's the point that I was wanting to make, and that is the fact that where in the world is the sheriff in this? The sheriffs have the ultimate duty in their county to pull things into control. And this is one of the reasons that I've stated that it's very, very important that people in their counties elect good sheriffs, because the last two sheriffs they've had down there have sat on their hands and have done absolutely nothing. In fact, we know that one sheriff certainly is part of the corruption. And this one, there's a strong likelihood that this one is certainly a part of the corruption. And then you have a judge, an attorney, and a supposed husband, which I don't even call him a husband at all, who is being pretty successful at keeping both the state and federal government at bay.
All right. How would you want to respond to that at all, Marilyn?
I think I want to respond just to what the gentleman said at the beginning. It is very clear to those of us with disabilities how easy it would become to be dismissive of people who are perceived as less worthwhile. And there's a thousand examples of this. My colleagues, friends and colleagues who have significant disabilities, if they go into the hospital for a routine procedure, they're pressured to sign do not resuscitate orders. So that if they need reviving, they wouldn't have to be revived. And yet they very much have valuable youth, you know, lives that are active and interesting and have much value and quality to them, and they want to live.
Hold that thought just for a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is Marilyn Golden, and of course we have Sam calling from Missouri. Sam, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask from Marilyn's standpoint, what you're obviously keeping a good eye on this, being in the position that you're in. What at this point are you suggesting that people do with disabilities to make sure that they don't possibly wind up in this situation, and whether it be this circumstance or some other circumstance?
That's a good question. I will tell you what I did. I executed a durable power of attorney, naming somebody I really trust as an agent to make my health care decisions if I'm incapacitated. And there's an excellent a sample form on the website of the California Healthcare Association that allows you to state if you want decisions made in general in a direction towards life. And I sort of checked off that and checked off my other preferences. And you have to get your agents and your friends and family to really be strong advocates with the medical profession, because they don't always observe powers of attorney and living wills. So you need strong advocacy, too. You need sort of watchdogs among your family and friends who will be there to fight for you if you can't be fighting for yourself. But that, with that legal document in there in the hands of somebody who you can trust to be a good advocate for you, that's a good start.
All right. Now, do you have the website for that
I'll come up with it shortly, but maybe after the next question or something.
All right,
like
fine.
That.
Anything else you wanted to say, Sam?
No, that's fine, Dr. Stan. I'm glad you're doing this broadcast, because this should weigh on the hearts of a lot more people with disabilities than it is, and it's high time that all of us, disabled or not, come down out of our arrogant clouds and understand that we're all just one heartbeat away from being in this situation. And and we need to just, start understanding that things are not as they always were. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Thank you so much, Sam. And the point I would like to make is that there really are people who have a different agenda. There really are people who are certainly anti-life. And one of the things they want to do is they want to play games with words. They want to use this word, this phrase, extraordinary care. Now, what does extraordinary care mean to you? You know, when you go to the hospital, do you want extraordinary care? You know, if you're on the verge of death and, you know, you're prolonged there, do you want to linger on for weeks or months or years? Do you want extraordinary care used on you? And, of course, once you've accepted that term, without a definition, why, you've signed a blank check. So they can kill you. Now, I have been to medical meetings where they had this ethicist. And, boy, if there was ever a slick talker, this was really it. This was a woman at a hospital I was on the staff at. And she came in and she was saying that extraordinary care was starting food and water on an older person when they came in. And once you started food and water on them, why, it was very difficult to discontinue it. And she used the analogy of a movie, that a cowboy movie with Steve McQueen in it, and his best friend had been captured by the Indians, was being tortured to death, and Steve McQueen, of course, because he loved his friend, he shot him. He killed him so the Indians couldn't torture him anymore. And then carrying this idea over to the extraordinary care in hospitals, maybe we shouldn't start food and water on people at all when they came in, because we'd have to continue it. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Marilyn Golden, and of course she works with the Disability Rights Group. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we had Sam calling from Missouri, who's blind, and he's concerned that there may be people who feel that his life isn't worth living. And, well, there probably are. In fact, that was the Nazi idea, that anybody who wasn't perfect would be better off without. Certainly the people who had mental illness, or the people who had physical disability, or the people who were feeble-minded, why, they were eliminated. Why? Well, it was simply a matter of applied eugenics. It was a Darwinian concept, a survival of the fittest. Only the best and the most healthy, the blue-eyed, blonde-eyed people, if we're going to create a super race, we certainly can't have all these other racial groups in here polluting the gene pool. And as Rudolf Hess once said, Nazism is nothing more than applied science. Nazism is nothing more than applied science. And if you look at it from a purely a scientific point of view, a pragmatic point of view, what they did was fine. I mean, it was applied science. They wanted to breed a super race so that we could have the Thousand-Year Reich. Well, of course, from a moral point of view, what they were doing was reprehensible, and these ideas have been repudiated by nations throughout the world. Unfortunately, that mentality, in my opinion, is still there. I know when I was in my training in orthopedics, and one of the things we did was go up to the Sonoma State Hospital in Northern California, in Maryland. You probably know where that is, living in this district. But I was told, and this was in the late 1950s, went up there because they did a lot of reconstructive work on many of the feeble-minded children who had physical disabilities. And the doctor there had said that when he had arrived several years ago, and so this would have been the mid-1950s, if one of these disabled children, and many of them were mentally defective, we might call them feeble-minded, they were imbeciles or morons, but they were human beings, and certainly they had a right to live. But if they got a pneumonia or they got a very, very bad cold, they'd simply move the bed over by an open window and let them get chilled and get pneumonia, not give them antibiotics and die. And he said he put a stop to that. He would not tolerate that sort of thing. And he tried to re-indoctrinate the people in the value of human life. Why do you have to teach people the value of human life in America? Because there are people who have a different view, a different attitude. They feel that the lives of these children were not worth living. There was a program on CBS just about, I guess it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, this one family, the children wanted to find out what had happened to her brother. Well, he'd been mentally defective, and they put him in an institution, and all these children, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these children, were used on experiments. And they were all died, and they were just put in this cemetery, and there were literally hundreds of graves of these children who never should have died. They were allowed to die because they were simply a burden on society. What sort of society is that would represent that? These things did not happen in Hitler's Germany. They happened here in America in the 1950s and the 1960s. And it's about time that the American people began to understand that there is certainly lingering beneath the surface, I believe, many of the same philosophies that were so predominant in Hitler's Germany. And I know that's your concern too, Marilyn, isn't it? That there really are people who look at the world differently?
Well, let me share with you some information towards that point that has been going around in the disability rights, among disability rights advocates in these recent weeks. This is really, Terri Schiavo is seen as one of a series of food and water cases, so to speak, that we've seen where certain parties, sort of what you're saying, certain parties are saying that the risk of error should be reversed to favor death over life, so that people with significant cognitive disabilities can be starved and dehydrated even without clear evidence that they themselves would want to refuse food and water. Now, one could say, why do they want to change the legal standards now? Why make it easier for guardians to refuse food and water on behalf of people who can't speak for themselves? Well, all the way back in 1983, more than 20 years ago, reflecting on the possible outcome of this very debate, a man named Daniel Callahan, who was then the director of the prestigious Hastings Center, wrote that a denial of nutrition may in the long run become the only effective way to make certain that a large number of what he called biologically tenacious patients actually die. He says, given the increasingly large pool of super attenuated, chronically ill, physically marginal elderly, it could well become the non-treatment of choice.
Let's hold on. We'll be back in just a moment with Marilyn Golden, the non-treatment of choice. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Marilyn Golden. Marilyn, why don't you go ahead and continue with your thought, because I think that this is the very crux of this issue. There are people who look at the world differently. And of course, I believe that human life is important. I believe every human life is important. And if I didn't believe that way, why, of course, I could not do what I do, being a physician. The whole purpose of being a physician was to try to preserve human life. But there are other people out there who do not value human life the way that you and I would, and they would feel that these people are just a drain on society. The elderly tenaciously hanging on to life, and wouldn't it be better for society if, well, of course, the tragedy is, once we start that, then at what point do we stop? Would you pick up your thought there?
Well, I was mentioning how we have quotations from back in the 80s when individuals made the argument that it really may need to be the denial of food and water that is the way you, in a sense, control the population of ill people to not become a financial burden. We see the Schiavo case as a wake-up call in the disability rights movement, because it's really about dismantling protections for people who have guardians and giving guardians carte blanche to starve and dehydrate those who are not seen as worth the effort or the expense. Disability rights groups are arguing that it's really time to reestablish constitutional protections, because the healthcare system is putting profits before people. And for us, that's the bottom line.
Well, I agree with you totally. In fact, I was raised in a situation where we had county hospitals. But I will tell you that the care in those county hospitals was excellent. And certainly we didn't have every room with a television set in it. We would have a ward, but we would have people there, and the people were constantly turned, and they did get bed sores, and they got clean sheets, and they got fed, and they were cared for. Two or three women that would be working on a ward there gave tremendous care because they cared about these individuals. Yes, their lives were limited. They were maybe going to live 2 years or 3 years or 5 years or 8 years, but every one of them was still a unique individual. And, of course, in my way of thinking of it, made in the image and likeness of God. And this is the way society was when I was a young doctor, and we're talking about back in the mid-1950s was when I first was in my training and working in these institutions. But these people were cared for, they were well cared for, and... Well, we were just talking about how, of course, in 50 years ago, before we had all the wonderful benevolence and concern about everything and the government's going to provide for everybody, why, people were cared for. They were cared for, and they were well cared for. And it seems like the more sometimes we have the politicians talking about being compassionate and caring, the more why we seem to have really less real concern over human life. We see the politicians posturing, oh, Jeb Bush is just so sorry he can't do anything, and the president's so sorry he can't do anything. But, of course, they leave it up to a couple of pro-death judges to make these decisions. And, of course, where does a judge get off saying somebody can die without due process of law? And that's what it's really all about. What if you're out there in the listening audience and you're concerned? I'm concerned. I know Marilyn's concerned. We'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, you know, you hear these things on television. They're saying, well, now, she doesn't feel anything bad. She doesn't mind being starved to death. This isn't bad. She's not suffering. She doesn't have anything to drink, and she has an intense thirst. Oh, this doesn't bother her at all. And, of course, she's not feeling any pain, and she's going to drift off into a coma and just go to sleep. And I listen to this. And I wonder what sort of madness, how do they know that if you were to starve, as I said earlier, a cat to death, you would go to prison in America today. And yet it's all right to starve to death a human being. And the rhetoric and the sophistry that we hear on television today to justify what I believe is not, simply allowing somebody to die. I believe it's murder. I believe it's a conscious effort to kill Terry Schiavo. Why doesn't anybody want to talk about that, Marilyn?
Oh, gee. Well, the disability rights movement is talking about it along the lines that we've been talking tonight. And I think the failure to talk about it has to do with a failure of awareness. In our case, the disability rights perspective on this, I want to go back to an earlier point, if I could, which is that people wanted to know where the good forum for power of attorney that I recommended earlier could be found. You can find it on the website of the California Hospital Association. Just simply search for power of attorney, and it comes right up.
All right, fine.
It's the California Hospital Association, and that's www.calhealth.org, calhealth.org.
All right, fine. Well, we've got George calling from Toronto, Canada. Hi, George. How are you doing?
Yes, good evening.
Okay.
You know, I've been listening to you for quite a few years, Dr. Monteith, and I think of the Dr. Day Dunnigan tape, and... I look at everything that's transpired in the last week, and I'm just amazed at the manipulation to bring this situation about.
Now, you're speaking of Dr. Dunnigan. He was the pediatrician from Pittsburgh who had heard the talk given by Richard Day. Dr.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Day was the medical director of Planned Parenthood, who was talking about how there this is 1969, how there are too many people in the world, and we're going to have to eliminate a lot of them, and certainly disabled people was part of that.
Yes. I just feel everything that's transpired in the last week has been totally manipulated. Everything's been bought and sold to bring about this situation. I'm just totally appalled. Now, I guess I have a question, and that is the next step, because to me this is just the first step. At what point do the hospitals and the doctors, and this is my question, I'll hang up, at what point is the next step taken for the hospitals and the doctors to make those decisions and nothing to do with family members? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you very much.
All right, fine. Of course, George calling from Toronto wants to know when the next step along the slippery slope comes. What are your thoughts on that, Marilyn? Because I think this is sort of the opening salvo in a very, very real war that's being waged to break down the resistance of the American people. Death with dignity. They have all sorts of wonderful terms like this, but you get right down to it, it's murdering the lives that are not worth living. But else's standard, of course.
The next steps are being taken all the time, and we've talked some about it tonight, what's happening behind closed doors in hospitals and nursing homes. In nursing homes, many people with dementia who could still eat biologically, who could still eat and drink themselves, but who cannot feed themselves because there's no nursing staff to feed them, are being put on feeding tubes. And if feeding tubes are considered to be extraordinary treatment, as you were saying, we're there on the slippery slope. I'm afraid that I'm going to have to leave you after I didn't know quite how long we would be going, but it's been a pleasure to be on with you, Doctor.
All right, you're going to have to take off right now?
In a few minutes.
All right, fine.
When
you
stay
as long as you
bit.
Can, let us know when you have to go.
Okay.
And, of course, as far as George calling from Toronto, I believe, of course, that we are being manipulated to accept the fact that there are certain lives that are not worth living, and I believe it will be a long, slow process, but I think step by step we're seeing the erosion of the basic moral structure of our society. And if people will go along with this, and of course there's not an outcry that these judges be tried for murder, and it's all being handled under the guise of under the color of law. Well, if the judges said it, gee, there's nothing Jeb Bush could do, there's nothing Congress could do, there's nothing the president could do. So they tried their best, but gee, that we are a nation of laws. And I think my fear is that we are becoming an increasingly lawless nation, not a nation of laws, but a nation of men. Do you have any thoughts on that, Marilyn?
Oh, gee. I think the laws are fine, but the courts are not following the laws. We think the constitutional protections that there are would help us, but we're afraid they're being disregarded. With that, I have to leave you tonight.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much for
being
with us.
It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Bye-bye. Pleasure. And let's go to Flora, who's calling us right now from Michigan. Hi, Flora. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm a lot better than Terry is. I'm
right. Sure. Well, I think this has had an impact on all of us. I mean, you know, they focus our attention on this, and you hear about it all the time, and you become emotionally involved with the family, and of course it divides the country. There's some people who say, well, maybe you should be better off, after all, if you believe in God, wouldn't she be better off going to heaven where she'd have a better life there? And I think that, boy, talk about a sophistic type of argument. That is the ultimate in sophistry. But go ahead, Flora. Tell me what you think.
Well, I think this guy is set up to kill her right from the beginning. Possibly, maybe she found out that he was running around on her or something. I don't know. And they had a fight, and he strangled her, you know, because there was a doctor that said that the only way that she could have had those injuries to her neck was by strangulation. And there was also three nurses, and they all three made affidavits. They said he would go in the room and close the door, that there were insulin syringes in the wastebasket afterwards, that...
Well, I've heard these stories. I hope they're not true, but I heard one story where the nurse then would check her blood sugar and find, you know, she just wouldn't have any blood sugar at all. If these certainly are true, then this should have been considered by the courts, but...
Well, apparently he had something to do with the sheriff's department in a medical way. I understand he was, did he take RN training or something?
I really don't know, and because these are all just reports we get off the Internet. So, you know, I just wish that we had somebody right there who had first-hand knowledge of all of this, that this is really true. This, of course, would suggest that he was trying to kill her, and that would have been, of course, a criminal activity, and he should have been charged for it.
That's the way I feel about it. And he wants her cremated as soon as she's dead.
Right.
To cover the evidence, I think.
Well, I'm very concerned that he wants her dead, and the courts are going right along with it.
And if he was friends with the sheriff's department, and of course the sheriff's department often talks with the judges, you know, and the attorneys are going to select the one that's going to be most favorable to their case. And I just feel like, you know, it's...
Well, I think it was so interesting, Flora, that they said, well, it was the computer that that picked this judge. Well, of course, you know, a computer picking a judge, I mean, I'd rather have a lottery, you know, where they're blowing these little ping-pong balls up in the air than have a computer picking the judge. Because, of course, you get out of a computer what you put into a computer.
Oh, yeah, well, I imagine there's ways to manipulate the computer deal, too.
Just like the voting machines, where there's one precinct there was in Ohio with 800 voters and 4,000 votes for Bush on the voting machine, and they described it though as a hiccup. Maybe the computers down there in Florida had a hiccup, and that's how we got the judge we did.
Well, I'll tell you, our computers, not computers, but our voting machines, the electronic ones,
right.
You know, we also had a paper ballot to go with it.
I think we need to get back to a paper ballot. It may not be as efficient, but I'll tell you what, it's much more honest, because I don't trust those machines at all.
Well, I have to vote by...
Absentee?
Absentee,
well,
yes.
Well, I think that we better get all back to absentee ballots, and then, of course, there's going to be a paper record.
Then it's going to take them a long time to find out who won.
Amen. That's all right. I would far rather take a little while to find out who won and get an honest election, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
God bless. Exactly. Let's get back. Thanks very much. Let's get a Robert calling from Denver, Colorado. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Robert, what are your thoughts on what we're talking on?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much for taking my call. Great show once again, as always. I think that Terry Schiavo case is very suspicious. I think a lot is going on that we don't know about. I think this man is enthusiastic about having his wife dead to cover something up he did to her, and we may never know the truth. But you said something earlier that caught my attention. I wanted to follow up with you on it. You mentioned President Bush possibly sending in federal marshals to reinsert the feeding tube. Would that not violate posse comitatus?
Well, no. That posse comitatus is only for the military. It would not be federal marshals.
Oh, I see.
And basically, of course, the president could do that if he wanted to. Now, I certainly don't think that the matters dealing with life, liberty, and property would ordinarily be a province of the president at all. That would be something that would be handled by the state. But with the total perversion of the laws of this land, and with the federal government interfering in everybody's life, and monitoring what we buy and what we sell, and monitoring our telephone calls and emails and our faxes, because that's what they do, with the Echelon program, and of course they watch us with the satellites from the sky. I mean, I don't think it would be stretching it too far to say he has the right to do that. And I think he could do that. And he would say, if you don't like what I did, why, you impeach me, and we'll see whether the people back me or they back you. And the people, of course, would back him, because everybody knows this is wrong. But the president says one thing and does another. And, of course, everybody says, why, he's just... It wasn't his fault that this happened. He did everything he could. And I would like to suggest he did not do everything he could have. I think he postured on this whole issue. I think they're using this for a political situation. I think they're pandering to the public, but I do not believe that they're really pro-life at all.
So posse comitatus is strictly toward the military, not federal marshals.
Right.
Completely different deal.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. Okay. Thanks for cleaning that up for me. Appreciate it.
Okay, anything else, Robert?
I think that's it. Once again, great broadcast.
Okay, thanks very much. Let's go to Roger calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Stan. I'll try to squeeze this in quick. And I heard Judge Roy Moore interviewed yesterday on with Sean Hannity, and he had it exactly right. Everyone else I've heard has it exactly wrong. And remember, Judge Roy Moore was removed as it should be. Not that he was removed, but as a political trial, not as a criminal or a civil trial. And many people stupidly do not realize that. Now, as he pointed out, Jeb Bush, he does have the authority to take her into custody. And this, with all these so-called conservatives, including many of the Republicans that ganged up on Judge Roy Moore, supposedly conservative, we got to do something about the tyranny of the courts. They have the least interest, and they feel now that the courts have ruled that Jeb is under some obligation to defer to those courts, which he is not, as Judge Moore pointed out very aptly yesterday. Your thoughts?
I think that Judge Roy Moore is a lot smarter than I am, and he's a great man. And the one thing I'll tell you that the other side fears is that the people of this country would hear his message. I subscribe to a humanist magazine. And shortly after Judge Roy Moore was removed from office, this humanist magazine was saying, there was a poll of the people there in Alabama. Can you believe that 73% of the people there believed that the courts were wrong and Judge Roy Moore was right? How could that possibly be?
Yes, now, of course, as I said, a political trial, and he was removed not for violation of the law, where he could have been criminally or civilly charged. Rather, he was removed for violating judicial invention.
All right. Well, I think the most significant thing about that whole issue was the man who was, of course, instrumental in getting him out, a man named William Pryor. Now, of course, our current administration claims to be a Christian administration, a moral administration. What's so very interesting is they were solidly behind getting rid of Judge Roy Moore and getting rid of the Ten Commandments, and they rewarded William Pryor, who, of course, had broken his pledge, first of all, to the governor of Alabama, Fob James, who he had promised Fob James he would back Roy Moore all the way. And then, of course, he had actually been on the defense team for Judge Roy Moore,
and so he
should have excused himself because there was a conflict of interest. He
went
on the defense team, and suddenly he becomes part of the prosecution. But he was rewarded by the Bush administration by being given an interim appointment to the federal bench.
And violated attorney-client privilege.
Right.
Aren't attorneys supposed to be disbarred for that?
Well, of course, not when you have the President of the United States rewarding you for your fine job of destroying the career of Judge Roy Moore. So,
and what I expressed, that thought didn't occur to Jay Sekulow or anyone else I heard. God bless.
God bless. Thanks so very much, and let's go to Jim calling from Missouri. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Sam, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
This is tangentially related to your topic tonight. I spoke with a young man today who is a Christian, and I actually had him read your Population Control Agenda Part 1. And to my shock, he was completely in agreement with the quote that you have from Mikhail Gorbachev in there.
In other words, he thinks we ought to kill off a lot of the people, or what?
I don't. Well, that's the thing. He's fairly young, and he hasn't, I honestly think, hasn't really thought a lot of these things through. He does think it would be cool to have 2 billion people, but I said, you realize, that's 2 out of 3 people being killed that are alive now. Oh.
Jets, he would like to volunteer to be part of that.
Exactly.
Well, why don't you start getting him to listen? Hey, hang on. We'll be back in just a moment.
That's right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. We've been talking about the Terry Schiavo case this evening, and we've got Jim calling us from Missouri, and he's had somebody read our population control. Was that the population control agenda monograph you're speaking of now?
Well, it's the one that is on Chuck Missler's website, part one and part two.
Okay, fine. Well, that would be the population control agenda monograph, right? I didn't know that was up there. Well, I'll have to thank Chuck for putting that up. Of course, we think Chuck does a great, great job, and I'm so flattered when he uses something of ours. But the thing is that most people do not understand that this is an anti-human agenda. And, of course, most young people today are victims of a public education where they've been taught there are too many people in the world, we've got to cut back on the world population, we're running out of oil, we're running out of water, we're running out of food, we're running out of natural resources, and they bought into the whole agenda of the Club of Rome. You know, people are young. It takes them a while to begin to be able to think independently of what they've been programmed. I know I went through this same situation when I first found out there was a problem in the world, and this went totally contrary to everything I'd been educated to believe. So maybe you could get him to listen to our programs, and he could enter into some of the discourses with us, and maybe I could begin to convince him. What do you think?
That would be helpful. I couldn't believe it.
All right.
I was completely amazed.
All right. Well, thanks very much, and don't be concerned. There are a lot of confusion out there, a lot of confused people, but I appreciate you getting him to read that. Try to get him to think about the implications. Mass murder on a scale never before seen. And, of course, some people don't want to get the world population down to 2 million. They want to get it down to about 500 million.
I read that on your Georgia Guidestone page.
Right. Hey, well, God bless. Thanks so very much.
Yes, sir. Have a good
week. Bye-bye.
Happy Easter.
And to you, too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And who do we have on the line here?
Yeah, I just wanted to squeeze an extra 10 seconds with Dr. Stan, and that is when Hannity asked Judge Moore, well, won't that lead to a constitutional crisis? And Moore says, well, it ought to. We're long overdue for one, by which I take it he meant a test. A long overdue test of this notion of judicial supremacy.
I think that's right. I would love, to see Judge Roy Moore run for governor of Alabama. I think he'd win hands down. I think that he is one of the most feared men in America. Why? Because he has the courage to stand up for God and for country.
God bless him.
God bless him. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this program here. I hope you enjoyed the discussion this evening. I think it's so important that people understand there is a genocidal agenda out there. And until you understand that, you can't understand any of the things that are being done today as they glibly talk about why the persistent vegetative state. Well, this is Dr. Stan to wrap up this evening's program, and let me just point out that there is a genocidal agenda out there. There really are people who want to kill off hundreds of millions, frankly, billions of people. And if you don't believe that, you really need to go to my website, RadioLiberty.com, and pull down my Population Control Agenda monograph. And there you'll see, quoting Jacques Cousteau in the November 1991 issue of UNESCO magazine, where Jacques Cousteau is quoted as saying we need to eliminate 350,000 people a day. Now, if you say, well, that's all right, you can say that, but I don't believe it, well, you call us at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll send you the pages from the UNESCO Courier that contain that quotation. If you don't believe that Barbara Marx Hubbard has talked about in the original context of her book, a book before, of course, it was laundered a little bit. We have copies of the original manuscript that she distributed across America in a book, The Revelation, the book of co-creation. And she talks about the necessity of killing a quarter of the population of the world. And then, of course, the demonic spirit, which dictates this to her, channels this message, says, of course, that's not your job, my dear, to do that. That's our job, for we are the riders of the pale horse death, paraphrasing, of course, what it says in Revelation 6:8. That's what it's this whole idea comes from, and this was a demonic spirit who's rewriting the Revelation. And, of course, we go in the background of the people from the Second Earth Summit talking about getting the world population down to 200 billion. The Georgia Guidestones that talk about getting the population down to 500 million. And there are some people, if you read the book by Holly Swanson, and we do carry the book, it's called Set Up and Sold Out, where she quotes, David Foreman is wanting to get the population down to 100 million. David Foreman, the founder of Earth First, a man who has powerful friends in high places in government, because when he was caught trying to blow up power lines, these power towers, indicted as a terrorist and convicted as a terrorist, he was given probation. Why? Because he has powerful friends in very high places. After all, his organization was originally funded, at least largely, by a man named Ted Turner, who created CNN. Well, you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that there is organized evil in the world. You need to get our 4-tape set on population control. You need to get our video on population control. You need to get our 4-tape set on the New Order of the Barbarians, our 4-tape set on genocide, and then, of course, if I could suggest a video, which I think will give you an up-to-date overview, it's called None Dare Call It Genocide. It's a video we did last fall of None Dare Call It Genocide. We have a great video that was done by Bill Sardi, how the drug companies are putting out drugs that are killing the population. That's the Bill Sardi video. They're all available from Radio Liberty. Population control, genocide, None Dare Call It Genocide, the Bill Sardi interview, and then, of course, there's one I think that really is very good and very apropos. We had a caller, George from Toronto, had seen it, called The New Order of the Barbarians. And actually, it is the talks given by Dr. Dunnigan, who had actually attended a meeting back in 1969 where Dr. Richard Day, who was the medical director of Planned Parenthood, had talked about the Order, an organization he was affiliated with that was running our country, that was running the world. And he talked about how there were too many people they were going to have to kill. So many people create new diseases, withhold treatments for cancer, and a most amazing 4-tape set, really one of the most amazing ones in our collection, all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for Terry Schiavo. Pray for our leaders. Pray for Radio Liberty. Till Monday, may the Lord be with you.